Hi everyone, welcome to our podcast. So we are five women who are undergraduates at the University of Chicago. Today we are discussing femininity and its relationship to sororities. But before we dive into our discussion, each of us are going to introduce ourselves. So I'll go first. Hi again. My name is Bolu. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a second year and I'm majoring in psychology.
Hi, my name's Natalia. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a second year and I'm majoring in sociology.
Hi, my name is Kelsey. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm a second year at the university majoring in economics. I rushed at UChicago my first year and joined the sorority Kappa Alpha Theta, but I resigned from Theta this past summer.
Hi, my name is Denise. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a fourth year and I'm majoring in sociology and global studies.
Hi, my name is Adina. My pronouns are she, her, hers. I'm a third year and I'm majoring in public policy and Spanish. I rushed at UChicago my second year and joined the sorority Kappa Alpha Theta as well. I also resigned from Theta this past summer.
In this podcast, we are discussing the findings of our research project for our sociology class, the Sociology of Higher Education. Our project was meant to study a phenomenon that was present on our college campus in 2020, and that was also related to gender and sexuality. So we decided to study sororities at UChicago.
While many students left campus and returned home for the spring quarter of 2020 due to the coronavirus, there was immense controversy in the UChicago community about UChicago sorority's actions and presence on campus. Old members of Kappa Alpha Theta exposed a racist incident that occurred at Rush 2019, and the advisors pushed to sweep it under the rug. Over three-fourths of the members of Theta resigned before fall quarter began. Other sororities also had a racist incident at Rush the previous year that caused other members to resign as well. On social media, members of the UChicago community criticized sororities on UChicago's campus, pointing to topics such as the fact sororities still predominantly cater and support white heterosexual women, heterosexual relationships, and reinforce traditional gender roles for women. Furthermore, students criticized the racism and classism sororities perpetuate. The increased critique of Greek life was not isolated to UChicago. The hashtag #EndGreekLife was trending nationwide on Instagram and Facebook.
Reading about this the past 6 months piqued our interest, which helped form our research question, which is, what types of performances of hegemonic and pariah femininity are reinforced or marginalized through the rushing process in sororities at UChicago? We will explain what these terms mean momentarily, but first want to explain the rushing process. Our hypothesis was that the sorority rush process caters to women that present hegemonic femininity and punishes presentations of femininity that don't fit into the narrow definition of hegemonic femininity.
We would also like to give a brief description of the rush process before diving into our research findings. Prospective new members, or PNMs, are female-identifying students that go through the rush process looking to potentially join a sorority. At UChicago, there are four philanthropic sororities, Alpha Omicron Pi, also known as AOPi, Delta Gamma, which is known as DG, Kappa Alpha Theta, also known as Theta, and Pi Beta Phi, known as Pi Phi. PNMs must start by rushing all four sororities. The rush process is 3 or 4 days, and each day, the PNMs attend parties for the sororities. Panhellenic Council rents 4 spaces off campus. Each day, the sorority has a different location and theme for their party they decorate and dress for. The themes and dress code are typically decided by the chief recruitment officer and others in leadership.
All women interested in attending Rush are required to attend an information session run by Rho Gammas, members of sororities that temporarily de-affiliate to help PNMs navigate the Rush process through Panhellenic Council. At this meeting, the Rho Gammas describe Rush, what to expect, what to talk about, what to not talk about, and what to wear. They include examples of outfits that would be good for each day of Rush's dress code.
When Rush begins, PNMs check in and get their schedules at University Church. They start by visiting each sorority the first day with a group of other PNMs. At the sororities' parties, PNMs are welcomed with a song, and they are led to a table by a member of the sorority with snacks and drinks. They have multiple individual conversations with current members of the sorority and are also greeted by floaters, who stop by to chime into conversations briefly and get to know the PNM. These conversations are fairly short at the beginning of the process, and then they get gradually longer, to about 30 minutes at the end of the process. Each day, sororities also give presentations based on the theme of the day, which could be highlighting their philanthropy, their values, or why you should join their sorority. The first 2 days are often described as PNM selling themselves to sororities, whereas Preference Day, also called Pref Day, which is the final day, is the sorority selling themselves to you, as you are almost guaranteed a bid from one if you make it to Pref Day.
At the end of the day, the PNMs rank the sororities and the sororities rank the PNMs. A member of the sorority can only rank a PNM if they have talked to them or have a previous relationship with them. The rankings by sorority members are based on qualitative measures. They are combined with quantitative measures such as GPA to produce the PNM's final ranking. Both PNMs and sororities submit their rankings to PanHEL at the end of each day. Each day, a PNM is dropped from at least one sorority depending on their rankings and the algorithm. So on the last day of rush, a PNM only visits one or two. PNMs can be completely dropped by all four sororities at any point of the process, although this is rare. Rush concludes with bid day, where PNMs receive a bid from a sorority they can choose to accept or decline. Once a PNM joins a sorority, they cannot join another, even if they resigned from the first. However, a PNM can rush the subsequent year if they are unhappy with a bid that they received. Now, we're going to share some literature sources we read that contributed to our research question.
Before we move forward, we want to explain some of the vocabulary terms we will be using during our discussion. Hegemonic femininity is the traditional, stereotypical presentation of femininity our society has created, which is introduced by Laura Hamilton in Hegemonic Femininities and Intersectional Domination. They are usually white women, with long blonde or brown hair, have uphold Eurocentric beauty standards, are skinny, and are heterosexual. They wear very feminine clothes, such as dresses and heels, and wear makeup. Pariah femininities are the opposite of hegemonic femininities. They are women who do not fit the stereotypical mold, as defined by Allison Georgia and Amy Stone in Containing Pariah Femininities, Lesbians in the Sorority Rush Process. This includes women who are overweight, not traditionally beautiful, disabled, sometimes women of color, and women who are considered promiscuous, masculine, or women who do not identify as straight. In this article on pariah femininities, Georgia and Stone mostly focus on how hegemonic femininities versus pariah femininities are addressed, unconsciously or not, during the recruitment and rushing process at sororities. In their research, there is an emphasis on the exclusion of lesbian students from sororities and containment practices, and how these are based on displays of pariah femininities which are seen as undesirable. Pariah femininities, as we define in our research, are seen as this undesirable, evil thing, especially in sororities, because they challenge the embodiment of and relationship between femininity and masculinity. It's concluded that lesbianism is a potential pariah femininity, because it has the potential to challenge hegemonic femininity, whether it is in being more masculine or just not having heterosexual desire. Being heterosexual is almost synonymous with hegemonic femininity in this sense. In sororities, the rushing process is described as gatekeeping through its containment practices. An example of such practice is using the term, quote, not a good fit, which is very vague and creates homogenizing effects on the groups, since lesbians are seen as an uncomfortable presence that challenges traditional femininities and could hurt a sorority's reputation. An interesting phrase used in this paper was that, quote, sorority members are afraid of the women embodying pariah femininities contaminating the whole group and other women within it. Seeing lesbians as a contamination to a sorority just because of wanting to protect their image and accepted sense of femininity is indicative of a huge problem regarding passive homophobia in sororities and the rushing process, which is backed by our research project here at UChicago. To briefly contextualize displays of pariah femininities, it is important to discuss deviations from the norm, specifically in terms of conforming to hegemonic femininity during rush. Our interviews provided rich insight into these performances in action. One example of this is in the dress code during rush, and how women were expected and explicitly told to wear dresses. During an interview, participant 2 explained, "Performing was in their clothes, like there was no deviation. Everyone was wearing dresses." It's not just about what clothes are worn either. Deviations can take other forms, like physical characteristics that can't be changed. For example, participant 2 further explained that this accepted femininity was a white woman with straight hair, blonde, brunette, or whatever, but straight hair, no crazy colors, and very feminine. If a woman did not conform to this, it was discussed among recruiters and decided upon, even if it was as subjective as thinking a PNM was ugly. Participant 4 explicitly told us what would happen in this scenario. She shared that the recruiters might not have said, "Well, it's because I think she's ugly," but they would have found a reason. They probably would have said she was boring. So essentially, when women had any sort of deviation, whether it be intentional, as not wearing a dress, or unintentional, like being deemed ugly, there was little acceptance from the shift from the norm, and the girls likely didn't receive bids to be a part of that sorority. Circling back to literature, more conversation on the celebration of hegemonic femininity is seen in the collaborative Laura Hamilton journal titled Hegemonic Femininities and Intersectional Domination, which was published just in 2019. There are a lot of privileges that are often associated with traditional hegemonic femininity, such as being white, being rich, being heterosexual, and being able-bodied, and all these total to a sort of superiority that some women feel over others. There is the introduction of the, quote, femininity premium, which is the goal in which many women are motivated to pursue hegemonic femininities. This femininity premium comes with many social and cultural benefits that ultimately are used in a way consistent with, quote, intersectional domination, a term defined by using intersectional location in the matrix of domination in order to exert power over others intentionally. Even though women performing acts of hegemonic femininity are still subordinate to men and hegemonic masculinity, they are essentially still beneficiaries in this domination. An interesting finding, though, was that certain subcultures like LGBTQ+ groups, POC groups, emo or goth groups, may put other femininity on a pedestal that counter these ideals. These can often actually be refusals of typical hegemonic femininity, like in fat acceptance groups, where thinness in fragile womanhood is seen as unrealistic and unwanted in the movements. Even these rejections, though, bring attention to hegemonic ideals, which can perpetuate this power structure between femininities and oppression of women. This connection between domination and femininity is profound because it shows how powerful our research is in terms of framing hegemonic femininity in rushing, because it is symbolic of a larger issue in the structures of domination, privilege, and oppression. To continue the discussion on hegemonic femininities in rushing, we studied gender conformity and body image. In this article by David Adams, titled Gender Conformity, Self-Objectification, and Body Image for Sorority and Non-Sorority Women, there is a study done which emphasizes how conforming to gender norms affects women in various ways, mostly negatively in terms of body image. I thought this study was particularly interesting because it identified the ways in which gender roles, conformity, and rules on physical appearance created harmful body image and consciousness. Rules relating to dress codes and modest womanhood were seen in some of the responses to our UChicago sororities, so this study really put the pieces together in framing the consequences of such practices. In this study, there was random sampling of undergrads from both sorority and non-sorority women, showing unique distinctions and similarities. They were asked to scale 4 things: conformity to feminine gender roles, body image dissatisfaction, objectified body consciousness, and physical appearance feedback. The findings were interesting. In the college setting, all women reported high scalings of gender body stereotypes and body dissatisfaction. This did not differ between sorority and non-sorority women. However, it is noted that, although it's a semi-universal experience for most college-age women, sorority status does have its extra impacts on objectification and ideals, especially during rushing. In the end, though, the inconsistency in scaling and numbers showed that sorority membership itself did not contribute significantly to negative body image or consciousness. Rather, the conformity to gender roles and accepted femininity did. So there is again a blurred line that can be talked about. College-age women in general face body image issues, pressure in gender norms and physical appearance, and body objectification. But the impact of sorority membership is, in this study, inconclusive. However, in our narrowed research of rushing in the UChicago campus specifically, the findings of such consequences that come with sorority membership were more conclusive. Furthering this discussion on gender conformity and sexuality, we analyzed an exploratory study of the experiences of gay, lesbian, and bisexual fraternity and sorority members revisited by Douglas Case and Graham Hesp for an overview on queerness in Greek life. This study did an interesting job of characterizing gay, bisexual, and lesbian experiences in sororities and fraternities. This was a 30-month-long study from 1993 to 1995 in which GLB, or gay, lesbian, and bisexual students, were interviewed and surveyed on their experiences in Greek life. The findings were incredibly interesting. In terms of the rush bid process, there were no formal exclusions for queer students. However, students did mention some questionable practices. For example, it was noted that when a PNM was rumored to be gay or was out, the chapter members sometimes spoke and unanimously voted against offering a bid to that student. Only after the students were already brothers or sisters did the acceptance process become more clear, probably because they couldn't technically kick someone out for being gay, and they likely had already formed close bonds. However, male respondents tended to have more negative reactions when they came out, and it depended on whether they came out voluntarily or if they were outed forcibly. When a male member was taken out of the closet forcibly, per se, the responses of fellow fraternity members were more likely to be negative and homophobic, but not otherwise. Furthermore, what else was interesting was that about 50% of men and a third of women admitted to feeling the need to hide their sexualities in order to be fully able to create meaningful bonds with their fellow brothers and sisters. That does signify a big problem, and relating to our research project, it shows how heteronormative ideas are translated into practice, silencing the experience of students that aren't cis, hetero, or follow typical gender roles.
So now we're going to talk about our research project and its findings. What our group did is that we created a survey which had questions asking about the rush process, how they reinforced or rejected hegemonic and pariah femininities. We asked questions such as how the ladies were expected to dress, compared to how they actually did dress, which characteristics did they use to rate a PNM either lower or higher, which topics were they allowed or not allowed to discuss during rush conversations. Additionally, we contacted some of the survey participants and conducted interviews with them so that we could ask further questions about the rush process. We have decided to keep the participants anonymous, so instead of mentioning their names, we will refer to them as Participant 1 and Participant 2, etc. We conducted 6 interviews, including one from one of our group members, Kelsey. Some of the major themes we noted from the survey responses and the interviews are the ideal sorority member, how sorority ideals are internalized, the presence or lack of diversity, and sorority relationships to fraternities.
Every woman who was interviewed said that the rush process upheld hegemonic femininities, which in turn described what an ideal member was expected to look like. In the survey, 57% of participants said that gender expectations were upheld by the rush process. For those who said yes, the values that were repeatedly mentioned were the way you present yourself, which is basically in your behavior and dressing. These behavioral traits were described as white upper class values, such as being agreeable, kind, polite, caring about fashion, and attractiveness. Looks-wise, the ideal woman was described as white presenting, with long brown or blonde hair, which was straight, with no crazy colors, and very feminine. PNMs were expected to wear dresses and makeup and nice hairstyles in order to look presentable. Just like I mentioned, the women were supposed to be agreeable and not discuss controversial topics during rush. Participant 1 said that the PNMs and sisters were advised to avoid discussing the 5 B's during conversation. Biden, meaning politics, Bible, meaning religion, boys, booze, and bucks, meaning money. What the participants from this survey got from the instructions is that the older sorority members assumed that all women were or behaved heterosexual, and that all of them felt comfortable wearing dresses and makeup. The expectation of having peaceful yet safe conversations were considered surface level and superficial to some of the survey respondents.
Some of these ideals put forth by the rush process seemed to be internalized by PNMs. A common theme among participant responses was the emphasis sororities put on first impressions. Because the rush process involved such short conversations, PNMs often felt that they had to portray a certain image of themselves that aligned with the ideal sorority member.
It was hard to understand all the problems, and I think I was very critical of the process at the time. There was also, I was afraid that I wouldn't get a bid if I didn't conform to these norms that I don't even know if they were there, but I believe were there for the ideal woman these sororities were looking for.
Many members expressed a fear of being judged. According to the surveys, the number one reason that P&Ms hesitated to rush was that they were worried about being judged. They felt that sororities have a cookie-cutter image that they try and uphold. They saw this image as proper, polite, well-dressed, and pretty. Because of this perceived sorority image, they felt that sororities might try and change them to fit this ideal. This overall had a large influence on their identities and how they portrayed themselves. Because they were going to be chosen and ranked, they felt that they had to act according to these sorority ideals. Because of this, much of sorority's portrayal of idealized femininity was internalized by P&Ms for acceptance.
I felt so uncomfortable, and I felt like I was just being judged at every moment. And that is really difficult to go through, especially as like young impressionable women rushing within the first, you know, it was the first week of school we rushed. And so having that be the start to your college experience, having to pretend and you're someone you're not, or, you know, be worried that people are judging you all the time, has a big influence on you.
Like previously stated, most respondents felt that they had to portray themselves as polite, kind, and reserved. This indicates that the sorority's portrayal of the appropriate feminine ideal was internalized, as P&Ms felt that they had to match it. Many stated that the whole process felt really false and that they weren't able to truly express themselves for fear of being judged. They stated that they mirrored others with their actions, and many survey respondents said that they felt these actions reflected predominantly white and wealthy definitions of what femininity looks like and what a woman's role in society is. One specific example given was that food was put in front of P&Ms, but most wouldn't eat it, or if they did, they would eat it very politely and only eat a little, reflecting an internalized view of women and how they're supposed to present themselves around food in public.
Additionally, P&Ms recognized that feminine ideals about appearance were internalized as well. Before rush, the sororities have meetings with the sisters and prospective new members to show them the dress code for that week. Each day has a different dress code with a name, such as cocktail party and brunch with grandma, and included picture examples. It usually consisted of women wearing dresses that were super feminine whilst being covered up in all the right places. And pants were usually discouraged, or if not explicitly said, many times women did not wear pants to avoid standing out in a bad way. There have been times in the past where sorority members have told their P&Ms specifically, do not wear pants, even if they were part of a formal, nice-looking pantsuit. Participant 2 had told me about this occurrence in the past. Wearing pants is traditionally not formal wear for women, and a P&M wearing pants could jeopardize their chances of being selected.
Only 2 of the 34 survey respondents stated that they wore what they liked to rush. One participant stated that rush chairs have complete control over how people dress and have pushed rules in the past about wearing dresses. Thus, there is a large outside pressure for P&Ms to act according to these sororities' feminine ideals. Many participants described how being told how to dress with these rules enforced the idea that the ideal woman was concerned with dressing nicely. Additionally, there are many covert pressures to dress and look a certain way. One participant described how the process of rush, where there are so many sorority members dressed alike at rush parties, create an idea of what P&Ms are supposed to do and look like. Many participants noted that they started to use these rules to judge others as well.
You know, even as a P&M, I remember seeing a girl who was going through the rush process. She was also a P&M. Like, I saw her wearing sneakers that were, like, super muddy, right? Like, she'd probably been to, like, a frat house or something, right? Like, it was not... And, like, I judged her because I was like, that's not, like, the date night. Like, who would wear that to a date night? So, like, even P&Ms are kind of already judging each other and being like, that girl's just, like, if she gets a bid, like, that's crazy.
The effect of sorority rush and identity was perhaps most obvious in the reactions of not getting into a sorority. P&Ms had internalized the sorority portrayal of the ideal woman enough throughout the process that not being accepted by the sorority had a large effect on their perceptions of themselves.
That was tough to see, too. You know, I remember girls not being asked back to the places they wanted to go and being really crushed and feeling like this was a marker on their identity, you know, and of their worth.
On the surface, because these rules have been enforced for so many years, it seems like sororities love adhering to hegemonic feminine traditions, but that is not completely true. In my interview with participant one, she had said that she had conversed with many other sorority members on campus, and they too criticized the typical rules that they are compelled to follow during the rush process. However, many of the rules on how to dress and behave do not just come from the older sorority members, but are also written in the bylaws of the Panhellenic. Participant one told me in her interview that the national organizations have great influence over how processes such as rush are run, and in order to change them, new bylaws have to be approved by the national organization over all four sororities. The process to create change is very difficult, which is why the rules don't change. Participant two had written in the survey that even though there were no expectations to dress beyond the dress code, she personally felt compelled to show the sorority members that she was stylish. This does relate back to one of the stereotypical characteristics I mentioned earlier about how PNMs are expected to be interested in fashion. I asked her why she felt like she had to do this. Here are some snippets of her response.
I think there's not just in sororities, but I think in like a lot of like leadership positions, like even in like presidential elections, there's so much focus on how like the female candidates are dressed. Yeah. Like they're allowed to wear like the pants, but it's like, is it well fitted? And oh, like look at her heel or something like that, or her like blowout, whatever. Like, and that gets translated into sorority life as well. I feel like an interview for a job in a lot of ways, and like it's, so that was the same mentality, except that this time it was not just about making sure that my tattoos are covered. For a job interview, right? Like making sure my shoulders are covered and my tattoos are covered and I look like a decent human. It was also like, can I match two colors together? Is my pant pleated in a nice way and like fitted nicely? So like, they didn't tell us like be feminine, and I don't think that there was ever a feeling of like, where you have to wear brand name. Like I was in Uniqlo, for example. Uniqlo and Target. Like that was my dress code for that day. But I still wanted to like show that I could like match like a mustard top to the right type of brown. So like that was kind of like my concern.
Next, we're going to discuss how diversity and hegemonic femininity intersect in the rush process. Diversity, or the lack thereof, is essential to understanding the identities that are rejected by hegemonic femininity, which is often associated with white upper-class women. One of our participants, who was involved in Rush as a PNM and a sorority member, noted that during the Rush process, white women passed very easily as traditionally feminine, whereas women of color had to try harder to pass. Sorority Rush reinforces white upper middle class values from the dress code to conversations about extracurriculars, while also shielding themselves from criticism by tokenizing women of color.
Class and race diversity in sororities is often abysmal. Many of the participants spoke about the use of extracurriculars to screen potential new members in conversations during Rush. One participant noted that they were looking for well-roundedness in the rush process.
And this was usually through conversations surrounding on-campus involvement in student organizations that PNMs had just joined or those that they were interested in joining. This ideal is pretty similar to elite college admissions and recruiting for elite careers. Having a vast array of extracurriculars is class-coded because of who can afford spending time on student organizations. Lauren A. Rivera studied the use of extracurriculars to further gatekeep elite careers in banking, law, and finance. The argument recruiters commonly made is that a student with many extracurriculars is more, quote-unquote, well-rounded. In our survey, when they were asked what they had spoken about during the rush process, 11 of the 25 women who answered said that they had spoken about their involvement in student activities. At UChicago, many extracurricular activities are also competitive, and first-year students may not have enough time to find their footing. But the real issue is that underlies the idea that extracurricular success makes a well-rounded student is that it is a deeply problematic argument that tends to favor wealthier as anxieties and points of discomfort throughout the rush process. The language used in the language of the dress code upheld traditional upper middle class values. The dress code for one day was even described as brunch with grandma. One participant also noted that while coming in with expensive clothes wasn't a spoken rule, many put a lot of time and money into their clothes, something that a woman with a lower socioeconomic status could not be able to afford. From our surveys with women who had disaffiliated from their sorority, they noted financial reasons for leaving.
In fact, finances were the second most common reason for women to deaffiliate. Racism was the most common reason.
Tokenism, which means using people in a marginalized community within an organization to show how diverse it is without providing authentic support, is a huge issue in sororities. A couple of our participants expressed disappointment at the tokenism that they noticed within the rush process. One survey participant wrote that she had originally been interested in a sorority because of their Instagram account, which was really diverse, but when she rushed, it was the complete opposite. One of our interviewees also had a similar experience with rushing and tokenism. Participant number two spoke about how much harder it was for women of color to pass as feminine in the sorority rush process and how they were often excluded.
But one thing that I do remember noticing is that, like, we have, like, the token, she selected, like, token brown women and token Asian women to speak to, the Asian women who did not fit the mold of, like, AOPI or other, like, whatever, recruitment, and brown women generally. So what I would say is that white women are, like, almost always, like, an easy, like, white, traditionally feminine women, easy pass, at least through the first day. Mm-hmm. Like, the pretty Asian girl, like, there's, like, this stereotype of, like, just like the right amount, like not too brown or anything, also like pretty easy pass. The rest of those people get assigned like the token others in the sorority to talk to them and to see if they might be a good match. Mm-hmm.
She also explains how she and her Black sisters were used as spokespeople for multicultural student organizations and multicultural Greek organizations, even when they were not members.
With the recognition of multicultural Greek life, like, I can't believe how many times I've been used as, like, the spokesperson for them when I'm not even in one of the organizations. Like, that is...
These issues were a large part of the reason that many women decided to disaffiliate from their sororities. Participant number three wrote about Theta Deaffiliation Gate 2020, which was a recent move from members of Kappa Alpha Theta to disaffiliate because leadership in the sorority did not allow women of color, specifically Black women, to speak to potential new members during the rush process.
And running recruitment, the head of recruitment for Theta, hid the specifically darker skinned women of color in the sorority. She did not match them with prospective new members as the days went on. And there were comments made saying that she was trying to show Theta's best side. And with that, meaning the best image she could project of Theta were these white, thin, wealthy women that she was matching with members. And typically that doesn't happen during Rush. It was a series of events that led to the protocols of Rush given to us by headquarters not being followed.
The sorority rush process is deeply exclusionary to women who do not fit the mold of hegemonic femininity,
which often includes women of color and women in a lower socioeconomic status. The focus on extracurriculars, high cost of participation, and dress code during rush all contribute to this issue, while tokenism in marketing and during the process also serve to conceal these deeper issues. In response to these problems, some of the women we interviewed were passionate about taking steps in finding solutions to these issues through leadership positions in their sororities or in Panhellenic councils.
Some ways, and I actually was just elected as the Panhell representative from DG, so I will be working with Panhell in the upcoming year, and I believe that there should be more accountability because at this point, We don't know a lot about like what other sororities have done to address the issues that have come up in the past year and that have existed for many years.
One participant also suggested that solidarity with multicultural Greek organizations and student organizations on campus are essential to addressing harm. She talked about an Instagram post she made to address the harm that sororities cause and what she hopes can come from beginning these conversations.
So essentially, like, I hope what the post does is, like, give them the stepping stone to, like, start actually having a relationship to, like, these organizations, to eliminate the relationship we have to the fraternities. And, like, just, it's, like, basically the bare minimum. I'm just asking for them to do the bare minimum, and hopefully that allows them to then do the rest of the work that they'll have to consistently, like, train and retrain their members. Because, like, I'm also doing the training and retraining for myself, where it's like, okay, like, this is what's appropriate. No, this is actually what's appropriate. So let's keep learning. But yeah, that's what I hope the post does.
It is important to recognize that sororities do not exist alone on campus. Through the Greek system, sororities are inherently linked to fraternities. Sororities and fraternities socialize typically 2 to 3 times a week. On Thursdays, a fraternity invites a sorority to their house for a study break, a name given for mixers to dance around the fact sororities are dry organizations. Each sorority has a head social event organizer that works with members of fraternities in leadership positions and their friends in fraternities to organize these mixers and secure invites to fraternity parties during the week and weekend. As participant 4 mentioned in her interview, the invites a sorority receives depends on how popular or desirable they are in the fraternity's eyes. Sororities are aware of this, and it influences the women they look for in Rush.
I think that there's a type of person who is drawn to sororities who very much buys into, no, like, if we are to be an important chapter on campus, we have to be hot. The boys have to like us. Like, we have to be the ones, like, it was very important, for example, that the first mixer of the year was always with Sayu. That was overemphasized, like, how important that was, like, how that meant that Theta was the most, the best, whatever. There were definitely people that bought into that, and it expressed itself throughout the year, especially with regards to the fraternities. But its expression through the Rush process was, we have to get hot, popular seeming people who will then, you know, raise that bar, I guess, continue that tradition, if you can call it that.
Some sorority members' desire to be seen as the top sorority by fraternities drives them to recruit PNMs who will uphold their status and thus social traditions. They look for traditionally beautiful and desirable PNMs, PNMs who display hegemonic femininity. However, there's a variety of opinions on how important it is to recruit members to uphold sorority status on campus. Participant 2 highlighted how problematic as a whole sorority's relationship to fraternities are, arguing that sororities should actually look for PNMs who do not care about the status of the sorority while rushing.
Do we really have to have a positive relationship to the fraternities? Do, like, we really have to care about what they're telling incoming first years about us? If, like, if those first years don't want to hang out with the sororities or don't want to become a part of these sororities because a fraternity man tells them that they're not cool enough or they're not the hot ones or they won't party with us, then maybe they just aren't good for our membership. And if that means that our membership dwindles, then good, because I'm not having members who are not they're not consistent with our values. Like,
in Bolu's interview with participant 2, they stressed that PNM should not be driven to join a sorority because the sorority conforms to hegemonic beauty standards and behavior fraternities find attractive. However, as participant 2 notes, some PNMs care about fraternity members' opinions, driving them to conform to these standards and for an organization that upholds them. This can be revealing about whether or not PNM and the sorority's values align. Nonetheless, even within participant 2's sorority, there was tension around the subject. Are sororities social organizations where their ability to conform to hegemonic femininity was essential to their success? Or women's organizations aimed to uplift, inspire, and support young women? In our survey, we found that many women were explicitly told not to discuss, quote, boys, booze, and Bibles, which included fraternities and parties. However, as participant 3, who is in the same sorority as participant 2, discussed with me, a key reason she and her friend rushed was to have access to top fraternity parties. They viewed sororities more as social than women's organizations. However, during Rash, sorority members expected PNMs to uphold hegemonic feminine qualities in conversation, meaning they were sweet and modest. They were not to discuss things like partying, even though it was a key reason why they were rushing.
A general understanding was to be nice, polite. We actually very funny. I'm not going to name this person, but this one girl kind of just like decided to be herself, and in the conversation they were like, why do you want to join a sorority? And she said to them, I just want a legitimate reason to get fucked up on the Thursday night. And obviously, like, they were really taken back, because that's a very unquaint, unfeminine, un, you know, that kind of like sweet smiley girl comment that you would expect from a girl rushing a sorority. I thought it was brilliant. I was like just be authentic and genuine, but like, yeah, I mean, it deviates from the norm, because we're not expected to swear or say that kind of, what would you say, like, like rude. And she was speaking on behalf of a lot of girls. Like, none of us are going to say it because it sounds very unfeminine, very like uncivilized and love, like, sweet. But yeah, a lot of us like are going in sororities because we want to have fun, party, and like get drunk on Thursday. like she was kind of speaking the truth, to be honest, but not all of us are too scared to say it because we know that's not what they want to hear.
For participant 3 and other members in her sorority, the parties were a key reason they wanted to join, but they knew not to discuss this during Rush because women were expected to be nice and sophisticated. In this manner, hegemonic femininity plays two roles in Rush. One, favoring women that present themselves as sweet and polite, and two, favoring women who are physically attractive and uphold sorority status with fraternities, even though no one was supposed to discuss this explicitly during Rush. Interestingly enough, several women said on our survey they wish they could have discussed fraternities at parties during Rush. Some want to use it as a way to find which sorority best fit the social life they were trying to achieve, as some wanted to use it as a way to weed out PNMs looking for sororities just for, quote, superficial reasons. Although neither PNMs nor sorority members are supposed to discuss fraternities during Rush, it's undeniable that a sorority's reputation among fraternity play a role in the PNMs some sorority members want in their organization and some PNMs desire to join certain groups. However, this influence is not universally upheld and often criticized, showing the greater tension within sororities about whether they are uplifting women's organizations or social organizations that are reliant on fraternities for social success.
Through our extensive research, review, survey, and interviews, we have analyzed a plethora of information regarding how current literature on hegemonic femininity relates to what we've learned about rushing in UChicago sororities. Though our interviews provided some mixed results, it was enough to agree that certain femininities like hegemonic are celebrated, while pariah femininities are explicitly frowned upon during Rush, which affects the inclusivity and makeup of sororities on UChicago's campus.
Through our surveys and interviews, we explored the issues related to diversity and hegemonic femininity within the sorority Rush process. For women of color and women who are not part of a higher socioeconomic status, the bar to pass, as traditionally feminine, is much higher, some of our participants, who are still involved in Greek life, did have solutions in mind to these problems, including solidarity with multicultural student organizations and re-examining their relationship to frats.
It's impossible to hold Rush as an isolated event where both PNMs and current sorority members are not influenced by the status of sororities on campus. Through parties and mixers and donations during philanthropic events, sororities rely on fraternities seeing them as high status and desirable. In order to be popular among fraternities, some looked for PNMs who upheld traditionally hegemonically feminine physical traits. Furthermore, using their goal for popularity among fraternities as a guidance to recruiting PNMs and the structure of Greek life parties in general leaves straight, cisgender PNMs heavily favored in the Rush process over their queer peers. However, controversy about the importance of fraternity brothers' opinions of sororities and their members runs deep, highlighting the tension between those who see sororities as organizations with powerful women supporting one another and those who see them as a means to party.
In my interviews, I asked the women if they felt like the benefits of sorority membership were worth it, going through a rush process that isn't very appealing, and I received mixed responses. Participant one said that she felt like it was worth it because the rush process only lasted a couple days, and after getting in, she can reap the benefits of sorority membership, which do last throughout college, such as forming friendships. Participant two felt like it was worth it for her, but it may not be worth it for every PNM that attempts to join. For example, joining for her was worth it because her whole identity did not revolve around her sorority membership. She was present in different places and different spaces on campus. For example, she got to explore her sexuality in separate spaces, and she was part of OLAS, which is a Hispanic RSO on campus, which she really appreciated. She feels like women who join a sorority and have it become their whole life, it may not be worth it for them because sorority membership can be very detrimental to their identity. So now we have come to the end of our podcast. Thank you so much for listening, and we hope that you learned something new today about hegemonic and pariah femininities and how they are internalized in the sorority rush process. Bye!